You're listening to the BBC. I'm Paul Henley. This is Europe Today with news and comment from around Europe. And coming up in the next half hour, it's a week of protest across Europe as public spending cuts bite. We hear about the police in Romania so angry at their pay being reduced, they insulted the president and threw eggs at his home. And as Madrid and Brussels get ready for protesters, we ask what the European Central Bank makes it of it all. Is the euro under threat? That's coming up.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. With Middle East peace negotiations in the balance, the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he'll make no quick decision on whether to pull out of the talks in response to the end of Israel's freeze on settlement building in the West Bank. The US State Department says it's disappointed that the moratorium hasn't been extended. The opposition in Venezuela has made significant gains in parliamentary elections, overturning the two-thirds majority that President Hugo Chavez's Socialist Party needs to pass major legislation without its support. The governing socialists still hold most seats, but the opposition says it won just over half the popular vote. The Chinese authorities are investigating allegations that a private security company colluded with local officials to lock up protesters in secret prisons known as black jails. State media said police had arrested company officials on suspicion of illegally detaining people who tried to complain about local injustices. The International Monetary Fund has given its strong backing to the British government's plan for a big squeeze on public spending to cut the country's record budget deficit rapidly. In an annual report on Britain, the IMF praises the plans of the Conservative-led coalition government, saying they will greatly reduce the risk of a costly loss of market confidence. Pakistan has protested strongly to NATO-led forces in Afghanistan about two cross-border helicopter attacks, which killed 50 alleged militants on Pakistani soil. The government in Islamabad said the attacks were a clear violation of the mandate under which NATO forces are in Afghanistan. Two leading reformist parties in Iran have been banned. Earlier this year, the two parties were accused of undermining national security. Officials in India, who are making preparations for the Commonwealth Games, say a fifth of the rooms being built to house athletes are still not ready. Cleaners and other workers are scrambling to tackle dirt, flooding, and other problems. BBC News.
BBC World Service, this is Europe Today. It's the start of what some people are calling Europe's Week of Anger. Workers across the continent are being called out on strike to protest at the austerity measures being brought in by debt-ridden governments. Wednesday we'll see the biggest demonstrations, notably in Madrid and in Brussels. John Monks is General Secretary of the European Trade Union Confederation.
We do not accept that everybody, including Germany and some of the stronger economies around Germany, like the Netherlands and Austria, should be cutting at the present time. I mean, this is what happened in 1931, that all the governments in the West all cut at the same time and turned recession and crisis into the Great Depression. And our nervousness and worry at the moment is that with the stronger economies and the weaker economies, the ones who've got little choice, being forced into austerity measures, that essentially Europe will plunge downhill.
Well, all the economic troubles are being watched closely in Frankfurt, the German city, which is home to the European Central Bank, which runs the euro. If governments worried about the anger on the streets decide not to make the cuts they were planning, then that could weaken the currency all over again. Germany is actually one of the few eurozone countries doing well economically at the moment, but will Germans end up footing the bill for others? As part of the BBC's Hard Times series, looking at the effects of the recession, my colleague Jonathan Charles has been to Frankfurt Airport to look at Germany's success and whether it benefits its European neighbours. He joins me now. Jonathan.
Paul, thank you very much indeed. In fact, today I'm standing right here in the centre of Frankfurt in the Römerplatz, which is the old town square in front of the town hall. There are beautiful buildings built in a 19th century style, sometimes 18th century style, all wood, lots of old style plaster. And the reason I say style is they were all destroyed in the Second World War and then rebuilt only 20 or 30 years ago. And it's a reminder to Germans, really, of why they need the single currency. They think the single currency is part of binding the continent together after two destructive world wars, and they understand that they have to make sacrifices to do that. That is still quite a strong strain here in German society. It comes at a time, as you say, when the German economy is booming, but that's causing all sorts of problems for the Eurozone because it means Germany's booming and other parts aren't. And I've been gauging the opinions of many Germans. I went down to a guitar shop in central Frankfurt, fantastic place, full of guitars all over the wall, some of them selling for as much as 3,000 euros. It's a place where pop stars often go to buy their instruments, people like Andy Summers of The Police or Gary Moore. It's also a place with lots of mingling with enthusiastic amateurs.
Hi, my name is Ben. I'm a student at the University of Mainz of English and German. Well, I think the euro is kind of a stable currency right now. We had doubts when it was introduced 8 years ago, but despite the crisis, I guess it's a real stable currency.
So you're not worried about its future?
Not at all. I'm rather positively looking into the future because of the whole US dollar and the pound just decreasing in worth, so the euro is pretty much stable.
Does it make you feel like a better European to share a currency with everyone else?
Sure, it makes things easier. Further, when we were traveling into other countries, you had to exchange the currency, and there was lots of problems with just paying and having the rest of the money to come back at home. So it's very nice.
Okay. Also, die halten es auch extrem lange schon.
Absolut. Sehr brillant. Geiler Ton. Ich benutze sie auch. Unter Seiten.
Was kriegst du dafür?
Machen wir 20 Euro.
20? Hm? Alles klar.
Hi, I'm Bernie from Cream Music, Frankfurt. Frankfurt's oldest music shop. We call it the Hall of Rock and Roll because we actually are here for 106 years. We're the fourth generation to run the store. It's an old family shop and a lot of history.
What do you think about the euro?
Well, it's our currency. I was a big fan of the Deutschmark. After the euro came, we are all sort of... It's something like that brought us a little bit more together, maybe, on the continent. The only problem is that the prices are just, well, increased, you know, and today, what 10 years ago was the Deutschmark price is now the euro price. But that's the business.
Last year, my father was working on short time during this time of year, and the German government stepped in to improve the current economy by introducing such things as the Abwrackprämie, where they offered amounts of money for old cars to get crashed and buy new cars from the manufacturers, and that kept the manufacturers busy, so there was not this decrease in the economy.
And people are back in work. I mean, there are fewer people unemployed than there were before the recession.
Yeah, they were kept in work because of the short-time working. They stayed at home for 2 days a week and worked 3 days a week so that they were busy part-time working, but still busy. It's very bad if you just let people go then.
So you're optimistic at the moment?
Of course I am.
The last couple of years we were actually quite careful in buying goods and stuff because we always sort of were short in advance. We never knew what's going to happen the next week, next month, next years. So we actually took it very easy. But generally I can't really say that we had a crisis. You know, people still like music and of course it's not so easy for the people to spend money. But I realized that people saving to buy something decent. So the cheapo weepo time is over. We're in the center of Europe and like Frankfurt, where we're located. So we get a lot of international customers coming in, flying in, buying stuff, fly out. Things are rolling.
Alles klar.
Ja, das geht so. Danke dir.
Schönen Tag, ne?
Ja auch.
Ciao.
Well, they're less mellow in other parts of Europe. I've mentioned demonstrations in various parts of the continent coming up this week. Jonathan Charles in Frankfurt, tell us more.
Yes, Paul, a big day on Wednesday in Madrid. That is going to be a general strike all the way across Spain. We don't yet know how well attended it's going to be, but there are going to be protests in Madrid, and there are going to be protests in many other capitals as well. But the biggest one is going to be in Brussels. The European Trades Union Confederation has asked about 100,000 people from all over the continent to converge on Brussels to make the point that they don't want governments to cut deeply at this time. They think it will be very damaging to the European economic recovery. And all this as well coincides with what the European Commission Commission are going to be doing on Wednesday in Brussels when they put forward their proposals for trying to make countries keep their deficits under control. What sort of sanctions are under consideration? There's a meeting tonight in Brussels as well to primarily discuss all that. And we know already that Germany and the European Central Bank, which is based here in Frankfurt, they're both saying that they will support the idea of sanctions on countries which don't cut their budget deficits enough if they're members of the European single currency. It's a big problem. Germany's booming. The other countries, as we say, are not doing so well. And that puts all sorts of strains on the Eurozone if you're trying to run one economy with two very differing types of regional economies, as I've been finding out. Passenger jets roar into the air at Frankfurt Airport, hurtling down the runway as they leave the city, which hosts the European Central Bank, and head to the other member states of the Euro. Business is booming in Germany. The country is shaken off the recession. Frankfurt Airport's a hive of activity. It's operated by Fraport, a company which has become much more aggressively competitive.
Airports are always very dynamic places, no matter where they are in the world. But there is a real sense of renewed vigour here as I look out onto the runways. The trouble is that what Germany's done is making it harder for Greece, Spain, Ireland, Portugal, all the other ailing members of the Euro. And of course, it only focuses more attention on just how much debt those other nations have.
Okay, so just the onward.
Inside the busy terminals, passengers check in for their flights. There are fewer staff than there once were. The whole process is much more automated. Airport operator Fraport has cut costs, an approach lacking in some of the other Euro member states. German workers have had to make sacrifices for today's success, though many haven't had a real pay rise for the past decade. Fraport's finance director, Matthias Zieschang, told me it's a painful lesson that much of the rest of Europe should learn.
We are in line with the whole economy, and so we have arranged a new contract with our labors regarding the ground-handling activities, where we have more or less a freeze of the wages for the next 5 years. And by this, we are regaining competitiveness, and this is good for us.
And Fraport's efforts are being repeated all over Germany. Unemployment here is now less than it was before the recession. The economy is expected to grow by 3% this year. Airport workers such as Georg Kröning feel they'll be penalised now for doing well, forced to bail out those Euro members that have been enjoying a wild financial party for too long.
It's not so nice, but I think also many Germans would agree that it's better to do this and save the euro than let the euro fall down.
It's not the way that it was all meant to be, though. A new year and a new era for Europe. Frankfurt celebrated the launch of the single currency in style. Outside the European Central Bank, which runs the project, crowds counted down the seconds to the euro's arrival. It all seems a long time ago now, but I was in Frankfurt reporting for the BBC on the 1st of January 1999, when the euro was launched to a sky full of fireworks. The idea was that all countries would benefit. They'd all cut costs by using the same currency, and they'd all see greater economic growth.
21,37 euro.
For the moment, it's possible to pay in euros only by cheque or credit card. As I went shopping using the euro for the first time on that historic New Year's Day, it did seem the start of a new era. Today, most Germans still want it to succeed. It's part of binding the continent together after two world wars. But they don't rule out the possibility of failure. Stefan Schneider is an economist at Deutsche Bank in Frankfurt.
After what we have witnessed over the last 2-3 years, I think it's fair to have some doubts. There's one famous quote which I like, and I recall that all the time, and that's, things which have never happened before happen all the time. But overall, I still see the chance, and I give that a higher probability, that overall it's going to strengthen the euro because the institutions will be revamped. So I think there's still a good chance that, you know, that was a kind of catharsis, which ultimately will lead to a stronger euro and a better functioning eurozone.
And Germany knows it's not immune to the financial earthquake being felt in many other countries which use the euro. Some of them are big markets for German exports. It would be better if they were healthy too. Frankfurt Airport symbolises Germany's close connections with its European neighbours, all of them within just a couple of hours' flying time. But it's also now a symbol of something else, the yawning economic gap which has opened up between them. Unless it can be closed,
the dream of a euro that can soar ever higher is unlikely to be fulfilled.
Jonathan Charles reporting from Frankfurt in Germany. We'll be hearing from Romania too soon. First, our business reporter Manuela Saragossa is here with a look at the economic picture across Europe. Manuela, things sounding fairly grim.
It's not so terribly bad, actually. The whole of the EU economy and the Eurozone economy grew by 1% in the second quarter of this year, so in the April to June period. And that really isn't bad if you compare it to other global economies such as Japan or the US, where growth was, say, 0.4%. Or 0.1%. 1% is pretty good. But as Jonathan Charles reports there from Frankfurt, it's all thanks to Germany. Germany's gross domestic product figures, so the value of its whole economy, have given the whole of the Eurozone and the European Union a big lift. And just to give you a breakdown, in the second quarter of this year, Germany's economy grew by 2.2% on the previous quarter. That's a big amount by any developed country standard. Compare that with Greece, where the economy contracted 1.5% in the second quarter. So Greece is still in recession. And you have also other European economies which are a bit slack. Italy grew by just 0.4% in the second quarter. So really, the headline figure really helped completely by Germany.
But there is a two-speed Europe thing happening here.
That's right. At Europe's core, you have these economies such as Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, Luxembourg, which are in good shape. And then you have the peripheral economies, mainly those in southern Europe, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal and Ireland, which are still struggling, all of them in the midst of some serious cost-cutting exercises when it comes to the public purse. And then, of course, because of Germany's relative strength, economies such as Poland, the Czech Republic and Slovakia are also benefiting from that spillover effect of a stronger German economy.
Is Germany's relative strength sustainable? Can it carry on?
Well, that's the zillion-dollar question, Paul, because the problem is for Germany is that it's done well, and as we heard Jonathan Charles there saying, because the euro has been weak, that's made German exports stronger. Why does that benefit Germany? Well, because it has a large manufacturing sector. It exports a lot. Exports account for a lot for a lot of its GDP. The euro has strengthened recently. So the question is, can Germany maintain this sort of growth that it saw in the second quarter if the euro is stronger? And some economists don't think that's possible. And they say much will depend on being able to replace any lost demand for German exports with more domestic demand internally in Germany. So in other words, getting the German consumer to open up his or her purse and spend a bit more.
Thank you very much. For the moment, Manuela Saragossa. Public anger at the austerity measures being introduced in Romania has been reaching Greek proportions. Today, the Romanian Interior Minister resigned because of this. Several hundred police officers who've just had their pay cut by a quarter marched unauthorised to the presidential palace in Bucharest, threw eggs at it and shouted something that translates roughly as "Get out, you miserable dog." Vasile Blaga, who's a close ally of the president, said the officers had undermined the state's authority. He said his resignation was a matter of honour. Well, tensions are running high after Romania's economy shrank by more than 7% last year, and international bailout loans need repaying with savage cuts on public spending. The BBC's Nick Thorpe joins me now from Western Romania. This demonstration sounds quite dramatic, Nick.
It was very dramatic indeed, yes. Up to 5,000 or some people say 6,000 policemen on Friday of last week in their full dress uniform marching on the palace. Some of them threw their helmets over the fence. They were pelting, as you said, with eggs, some also with sweets and different things at the president. I think the president took this very badly. He said over the weekend that they had betrayed effectively the trust that the Romanian state had put in them and had become a threat to national security. And the resignation of the Interior Minister this morning, really, I suppose, a logical conclusion of that line of thinking, really, that the police had overstepped the mark. They've been badly hit by these austerity measures too, a 25% cut in their pay. But quite dramatic moments, really, that Romania is going through at the moment.
And the president has been making public gestures to show that he's saving money too.
Very much so. He has quite a popular, some would say even a populist touch here. He was filmed arriving at his office this morning without his usual police escort. He's now abjured. He said he doesn't want a police escort anymore from policemen who behave like this towards him, who insult him in this way. So he arrived in his own private car, smoking a cigarette, chatting with reporters without any apparent bodyguard in view. So almost trying to take advantage of the situation to restore his own popularity with the public.
Bad times for Romania. Things were beginning to pick up and the mood was beginning to lift, and then suddenly the recessions hit it harder than almost anywhere else.
That's right, the boom years of the mid-2000s, so up until 2008, even early 2009, Romania did think for a moment it might escape the recession. But now, as you said earlier, very deeply into the recession, the IMF measures, this 20 billion euro bailout package, are coming with it measures which are these austerity measures which are blamed by the Romanian population on the IMF, but in fact these were ideas of like cutting pensions, cutting public service wages. Those measures, to be fair on the IMF, were not actually dictated by them. The IMF set the parameters in a way, and those were the only measures which the government found, or the easiest measures which the government found, however painful, to try and bring the ballooning budget deficit under control.
Thank you, Nick. Nick Thorpe in Western Romania. The Irish economy, once so strong it was called the tiger, took one of the hardest hits when the banking crisis struck. The government in Dublin slashed public spending to cut borrowing, and now Ireland's economy is said to be in danger of crashing again. This week, the Irish Finance Minister, Brian Lenehan, will unveil exactly how much the banks have lost. He's been talking to the BBC's business editor, Robert Peston, who started by asking, given the reckless lending of banks, which led to property prices first quadrupling over 10 years and then, since 2007, being cut in half, is there a case for punishing those reckless banks? Here's the Irish Finance Minister's response.
Well, the Irish banks are very dependent on the wholesale money markets, both for deposits and for debt finance. And clearly, given the dependence on international markets, it's not very sensible to tell those who lend you their money that you don't intend to pay them back.
But doesn't it fill you with a degree of anger in the sense that shouldn't these international creditors have just known better?
What fills me with anger is those who brought us to this state of affairs. And really, those who acted in good faith in lending money to Irish lending institutions have to be convinced that Ireland will honour its obligations and Ireland's banks will honour their obligations. If those obligations are not honoured, Ireland's funding position in the future would be perilous. So I don't think that the kind of scenario you're advocating is a live option for Ireland.
Now, there was enormous relief, not only in Ireland but elsewhere, when the economy started to grow again earlier this year following an extraordinary contraction last year of something of the order of 10%. But the latest figures show that the economy shrank again. How worried are you about that?
Well, I mean, the GNP fall was, I think, 0.3%. Essentially, the economy has stabilised. After a very sharp decline last year of 10%, we've seen a stabilisation of the Irish economy. And that's a remarkable turnaround. I think in economic history, you'll find very few examples of economies that have suffered a 10% decline in national wealth and the following year have actually stabilised at zero. We've managed to do that because we've been consistent in our budgetary policies, because we've been consistent in relation to our credit system that we will honour our obligations. We've managed to weather this storm, and it is a storm. And there are still stormy waters ahead for Ireland, but we'll weather them as well because we've been consistent in our approach.
That's the Irish Finance Minister, Brian Lenehan. Our business reporter, Manuela Saragossa, is here still. The Irish Finance Minister there talking about stormy waters, specifically unemployment being a problem, the number of jobs shrinking. How much of a problem is unemployment generally across Europe at the moment? Big.
The headline figure for the whole of the European Union is that unemployment is stable throughout the region at about 10%. So about 23 million people are estimated to be jobless in the European Union. But that's an average. And the actual unemployment rate varies enormously from one country to the next. Countries like Spain have an unemployment rate of more than 20%. Ireland's is 13.6%, also one of the highest within the EU. But then the picture gets worse if you look at youth unemployment. So unemployment between those aged between 15 and 2024. In the euro area and the EU, it was about 20% in July this year. But in Italy, it's officially at just under 20%, 28%. And in some parts of the country, it's as high as 50%. And that's the same sort of picture in Spain.
Thank you, Manuela Zaragoza. Now, the children's entertainer you could describe as a clown in a suit. Gordon Dixon used to earn his living as a banker. In fact, he was senior member of management at Bank of Scotland, but investments and share options worth around $1.5 million that he'd built up during his career have been wiped out by the crisis, and his new way of making a living is as Mr. Giggles. Sometimes he's also Wizzy Wizard or Pirate Pete. Our reporter Hugh Williams has been to meet him.
Can I ask a question? Why are you all here today? You were invited? That's a good answer. A party? What kind of party? A birthday pirate party? For Pirate Pete?
No,
I didn't even know it was my birthday. Nobody told me.
My responsibilities were primarily to ensure that the bank adhered to all the rules and regulations, the advertising rules, the giving of advice, just to make sure that the bank did not fall foul of the regulations. If you were to ask me, 4 or 5 years ago, is there any possibility at all in the Bank of Scotland losing money, I'd say no. We run a very tight ship. We would jump on anything. If there's anything untowards, we wouldn't touch it. You came in as a boy, you worked your way through the ranks, you learned to trade properly, you were a cautious person because the people before you were cautious and you learned from them.
I'm just going to count. 1, 2, 5, 9, 12.
What? You're running the wrong way.
Hang on. Wait a minute. Am I a good counter? I'll try again. 1, 2, 5, 9, 12.
The whole mentality changed. We were no longer a bank that was providing a service, but a bank that wanted to sell you, regardless of whether you wanted it. And they sold, sold, sold. The one thing it's very easy to sell is money. Everybody wants it.
Here we go. 1, 2, 3, kick.
I'm glad I get out now. I'm doing what I always did as a banker. Find out what people's needs were, what their wants were, and satisfying that need at a price that's affordable to them. And that's what all businesses should be doing. I still look upon it as a hobby because I can't believe I'm actually working. It's fun what I do. I enjoy it. The parents appear to enjoy it. I'm getting lots of nice feedback. Meet lots of nice people, as I did in the bank. So I'm always amazed that people think it's a dramatic career change. Children are used to seeing television pictures changing every 10, 15 seconds, so you've got to keep that level of speed going all the time. Supply lots of noise, you know, appeal to all of their emotions. Have scary bits, have calm bits, have noisy bits, quiet bits. Just keep changing the pace all the time and treat them like young adults, not as babies, not as kids. In many cases, I'm a little bit like a swan. You see me floating along, always smiling. You're thinking, he's not a worry in the world. He's loving this. Underneath, my legs are going fast. I'm trying to think, what's the next effect I'm going to do? Is that child okay? Is that child distressed? Is that, have I got that child at the back's interest? There's somebody because they're fidgeting at the air. What am I going to do there? So you're thinking of all of these things going at the same time. So your mind's going at 10 to a dozen, but all the time you're looking very relaxed.
That's not goodie bags for the boys and girls, is it?
It is.
Boys and girls don't like goodie bags.
No, they do. They like
do you?
Yeah!
I know it sounds corny, but what I genuinely believe I'm doing is building childhood memories. I'll continue entertaining children for a while longer yet. If the demand stops, then I'll just stop doing it, and I'll retire properly at that time, put my feet up, get the pipe out if I smoked, and just smell the flowers and watch the grass grow.
Thanks very much for coming to Adam's party. And remember, you've had a good time because Adam invited you.
Pirate Pete, a.k.a. former banker Gordon Dixon. Thank you very much for listening to Europe Today. Stay tuned, the world news is next.
If you're new to the BBC World Service and are trying to work out what's on when, we've got a neat little way to help you. Go to bbcworldservice.com and click How and When to listen.
Tel Aviv.
Perth.
Accra.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.